When you pass a stranger on the street wearing your country's flag, you feel an instant connection. You've never met, yet you're certain you share something profound. This strange phenomenon, feeling kinship with millions of people you'll never know, lies at the heart of Benedict Anderson's revolutionary idea. Nations are imagined communities that exist primarily in our collective minds. Unlike villages where everyone knows each other, nations require us to imagine connections with countless strangers. Yet this imaginary bond inspires millions to willingly die for their country. How did these powerful imagined communities come to dominate our world? And why do they command such deep emotional loyalty despite being relatively recent inventions? For most of human history, society organized around three beliefs. Sacred languages provided exclusive access to truth, monarchs ruled by divine right, and cosmology merged with history. Latin, Arabic, and Chinese functioned as gateways to divine knowledge, while kings derived authority from God. These certainties collapsed under scientific discoveries, economic shifts, and expanding global awareness. The medieval worldview gave way to our modern concept of homogeneous, empty time measured by clocks and calendars. This new consciousness, where events occur simultaneously to people who never meet, created the mental framework for imagining national communities. Print capitalism transformed human consciousness by standardizing previously fluid spoken dialects, allowing people from different regions to understand the same texts despite speech differences. These standardized print languages created unified fields of communication below Latin but above spoken dialects, gave languages permanence, and established languages of power that marginalized competing dialects. Novels and newspapers became vehicles for imagining national communities. Reading a novel where characters exist simultaneously without meeting mirrors the structure of a nation. People connected not through direct interaction, but by existing in the same social space. Newspapers create a mass ceremony where millions privately consume identical content daily, connected through awareness of countless others doing exactly the same thing. The first modern nationalist movements emerged not in Europe, but in the Americas, a historical puzzle since these revolutionaries shared language and ancestry with those they fought against. Why did Spanish-speaking Creoles, American-born Europeans, form nations distinct from Spain, fragmenting a three-century-old empire into 18 separate states? Each South American republic had been a separate administrative unit since the 16th century, with vast distances and trade restrictions creating isolated economic zones. The decisive factor was the Creoles' experience of systematic discrimination. Despite cultural similarities to peninsular Spaniards, American birth relegated Creoles to subordination. Of 170 viceroys before 1813, only four were Creoles. While Spanish officials served throughout the empire, Creole functionaries were restricted to their territories, creating confined pilgrimages that fostered a shared sense of fate. While American nationalists fought for independence without questioning inherited languages, European nationalism placed language at its core. Johann Gottfried von Herder conceived of nations as defined by distinct languages. Discoveries of advanced Asian and American civilizations suggested human pluralism, while scholarly advances undermined sacred languages' divine claims. The 19th century became a golden age for lexicographers, grammarians, and philologists whose work proved central to European nationalism. Vernacular languages transformed into national print languages, creating imagined communities based on shared language rather than dynasty or religion. For the rising bourgeoisie, print language became the basis for national solidarity, the first class to achieve cohesion through imagined connections rather than personal relationships. As popular nationalist movements spread across Europe, dynastic rulers faced an existential crisis. Their subjects increasingly identified as members of national communities, threatening traditional power structures. The response was what Anderson calls official nationalism, attempts to stretch the short, tight skin of the nation over the gigantic body of the empire. Russification under Alexander III exemplifies this approach, imposing Russian language in schools and closing German institutions. Similar policies emerge throughout Europe's multinational empires, with Anglicization across British territories and Meiji oligarchs positioning Japan's emperor as the focus of national loyalty. Unlike popular nationalism that grew organically from below, official nationalism was imposed from above by threatened power groups. These conservative policies adapted models of spontaneous nationalism while concealing the discrepancy between nation and dynastic realm. Subject peoples were to be culturally assimilated but never allowed to administer their rulers. Colonial administrative structures ultimately became templates for anti-colonial national movements. Modern Southeast Asian nations follow colonial boundaries rather than pre-colonial entities. Colonial education systems fostered nationalism by creating standardized educational pilgrimages where diverse students followed centralized paths, creating shared experiences and territorial imagination. Three colonial institutions profoundly shaped nationalist imagination: census, map, and museum. Colonial censuses transformed fluid social identities into rigid racial categories that persisted after independence. Maps introduced boundary lines demarcating exclusive sovereignties, changing territorial conceptualization. Museums and archaeological projects allowed colonial states to claim local antiquity while incorporating sacred sites into colonial maps. These tools explain why post-colonial nations often reproduce colonial categories despite opposing colonial rule. When Indonesia gained independence, it inherited not just territory, but ways of thinking about identity, space, and history shaped by colonial institutions. To be obliged to forget in the construction of a national narrative is as important as being obliged to remember. Nations construct identities through selective memory. French citizens must have forgotten religious massacres while remembering them as fratricidal wars between fellow Frenchmen. Americans learn of 1861 to 65 as a civil war between brothers rather than between sovereign nation states. These narratives transform historical conflicts into reassuring fratricidal struggles that reinforce national unity. The nation's biography must be constructed backward through curated memories that create a sense of shared destiny. This paradox explains nationalism's emotional power. Nations inspire self-sacrificing love by presenting themselves through kinship and home vocabulary, suggesting natural ties rather than voluntary association. The perceived purity enables nations to ask the ultimate sacrifice. In our globalized world, nationalism persists. The United Nations regularly admits new members, while established nations face challenges from sub-nationalisms. Despite its relatively recent emergence, the imagined community of the nation continues to command our deepest loyalties. National power stems from managing collective memory through selective remembering and forgetting. French citizens reframe religious massacres as fratricidal wars. Americans view 1861-65 as a civil war between brothers rather than a conflict between sovereign states. English school children learn about William the Conqueror without recognizing he conquered the English themselves. These narratives transform historical conflicts into reassuring fratricidal struggles that strengthen national unity. A nation's biography must be constructed backward through curated memories that establish shared destiny and fraternal identity. This paradoxical relationship with history explains nationalism's emotional power. Nations inspire self-sacrificing love by using kinship and home vocabulary, suggesting natural bonds rather than voluntary association. The nation achieves moral authority through perceived purity, enabling it to demand ultimate sacrifices. Despite globalization, nationalism persists. The United Nations regularly admits new members, while established nations face challenges from subnationalisms. Though relatively recent, the imagined community of the nation continues commanding our deepest loyalties and shaping our collective destinies.